Demonology and the Triphasic Model of Trauma, an Integrative Approach. A Good Omens fanfic written by NNM and performed by Starcatcher Betty. Chapter 14, Interpersonal Processes. Aubrey Time opened the door to her office to see an angel and a demon sitting in her waiting area, with a zebra haya what's it called placed on the coffee table before them. It was a peaceful tableau. Aziraphale was sitting with a book in his lap, his head bent so that he could read it. Crowley was curled up in the next seat, leaning against Aziraphale's side, looking completely dead to the world. Bud, for her part, was looking just fine. She had a new pot. It was a stripy pattern of grays and muted reds, reminiscent of some kind of textile. Bud's name, and gender, had been a bit of a surprise when Crowley first brought them up. Aubrey Time was unsure whether to take the name as a great honor or a subtle jab. On one hand, it could have been Crowley's way of letting her name the plant, letting her be the one to bestow upon it an identity. If that were the case, then she knew it was a deeply meaningful representation of how strong their therapeutic alliance had become. Alternatively, it could have just been his way of ensuring that she couldn't annoy him by calling him Bud anymore. Either way, Bud was Bud. Neither Aziraphale nor Crowley, nor, she supposed, Bud, had moved when she opened the door. Aubrey Time was deliberating about how best to wake Crowley up when he proved he was not actually sleeping in the first place.
"You know what she told me once?" Crowley asked.
At first, Aubrey Time thought that he sounded groggy, but then she realized he simply sounded relaxed. He lifted a lazy hand in the air, waving it enough in Aziraphale's face to get his attention. He was, very clearly, talking to Aziraphale, and not her.
"What's that?" Aziraphale responded.
"She told me," Crowley went on, sounding droll, neither of them apparently having any compunction about talking about her as she stood right there in front of them. "If she'd been there back then in the garden, she'd have blown up the wall."
"Ha!" Aziraphale scoffed. "Should have liked to see her try." He looked up to settle a grin on her, and she'd be damned if his eyes didn't literally twinkle with amusement. "Crowley, you asshole," she thought. She opened her mouth to speak, but she didn't manage it quickly enough.
"Exactly what I said," Crowley said, nodding with satisfaction. "Also, no dynamite."
"Hold on," Aziraphale furrowed his brow, turning to look at Crowley. "And just what would you have done with dynamite?"
"What do you think I'd have done with dynamite? Same thing anyone does with dynamite."
"But Crowley," Aziraphale sounded a bit put out, "you didn't have hands."
"Didn't have hands? Of course I have hands."
Now it was Crowley's turn to sound put out. He waved both of his hands around, flexing his fingers as if to say, "Just look at these buggers."
"Had hands?
Oh, please, I remember how you slithered about."
"You think just because you didn't see them, I didn't have them?"
"What would you have done? Held the dynamite in your mouth?"
"All this time, have you really been thinking I didn't have hands until you happened to see me with them?"
"Likely to get a fang in it, and then what would have happened?"
"How do you think you end up getting called something like Crawley if you don't have hands?"
"Well, feet."
"Feet?"
"Merely answering as a hypothetical, of course, because we've already established..."
"Are you calling me some sort of millipede?"
"I did nothing of the sort. I was simply saying..."
"Guys,"
Aubrey Time cut in, voice raised enough to draw their attention. Both of their heads turned to acknowledge her. "Thank someone," she thought.
"Clock's ticking," she said.
Crowley grumbled under his breath, and she assumed he was still on the topic of hands, millipedes, and the origins of the Earth.
but he also started to rearrange himself to stand up. "I'll be here when you get through, dear boy," Aziraphale said. His tone was suddenly much softer. He had his thumb holding the spot in his book, but Crowley had his full attention. Aubrey Time saw that, just how fully Crowley had his attention. Crowley, for his part, responded with another grumble. It was an affectionate grumble, she could tell, and she wondered how much more openly affectionate his response would have been if she had not been present. He picked up Bud, gave Aziraphale a pat on the shoulder, and then made his way to her office. It had been a peaceful tableau, in many ways, Aubrey Time thought as she closed her door and prepared to get to work. It had been an absolutely perfect tableau. Crowley sprawled out in his chair, his legs outstretched as if he were trying to be horizontal. Bud was on the end table, the sunglasses folded up beside her. Crowley rarely wore his sunglasses in session anymore. "So, how's your tree?" Crowley asked. He wasn't doing the thing. He didn't have to do the thing anymore. They were both past the thing. They had a contract, a mutual agreement, a commitment to being open and honest. "Looks fine, I guess," Aubrey Time answered, turning her attention over to the tree. It didn't look perfectly fine, but it was getting better. It didn't have any dead leaves anymore, so that was something. It and Bud were both in the long process of healing. Unlike Bud, though, her tree didn't have a name. Giving names to plants just wasn't her. "Are you planning on asking about it every week from now on?" There had been a time in the past when she would have asked that question because she was pissed off. There had been a time in the past when she would have rankled at the idea, when she would have snarled at him for bringing it up. There had been a time in the past when Aubrey Time had hated that tree. But she couldn't afford to hate it anymore. She couldn't afford to hate something that so easily symbolized so much for the both of them. He shrugged. "You can ask for help if you need it, you know." There had been a time in the past when she would have gotten pissed off, would have rankled and snarled, but not anymore. "I know," she said. She smiled. She smiled and she meant it. "Thank you. I probably will need some help with it at some point. I don't know the first thing about plant care." He opened his mouth as if he had a response right on the tip of his tongue and then had considered it at the last moment. Then he said, with the sort of tone that made clear just what sort of snarky assholery he had originally intended to lend out, Yes, Herb. I think that's been made abundantly clear at this point." "Oh, shut up," she said, feeling friendly, feeling relaxed, feeling free. "Come on, we've got work to do."
"That we do,"
he agreed. And so they got to it. The triphasic model of trauma therapy does not provide a precise timeline for each of the different phases. This is because each client has his own needs, and the length of each phase must be determined by those needs. There are, however, some specific therapeutic programs designed with the triphasic model as their fundamental backbone that offer suggestions for a timeline. Some of these programs, such as the one intended primarily for children and adolescents, but which Aubrey Time has modified for use with Crowley, suggested that the whole therapeutic project could be completed, at least sometimes, in as few as 8 sessions. With Crowley as the client, that was a laugh. That really, really was a laugh. Aubrey Time could admit that they were both very fortunate that Crowley paid in cash. If he had relied on medical insurance the way that so many Americans did, then she would have found herself audited by his insurance company ages ago. They would have been determined to look over her case notes so they could decide whether her work with Crowley had all been therapeutically appropriate, given just how many sessions it had all taken up until this point. She would have been threatened with her payments getting cut off, and she might even find herself having to return payments for past sessions if she had been found in any way wanting. Of course, Aubrey Time would have had far more pressing concerns than her paycheck if she ever had to show Crowley's case notes to anyone. It was very fortunate, really, that he always paid in cash. The point remained. She and Crowley had been working for a very long time, compared to the standard for this sort of treatment plan. Their therapeutic work had been disrupted and derailed in ways she never before would have thought possible. She was responsible, in part, for how slow progress had been. She was responsible, in part, for the fact that they had been working for so long since entering the second phase of therapy that she couldn't even remember the last time she had referred to the triphasic model of trauma in any of her case notes. Several times over, they had come perilously close to losing the plot completely. Demonology informed trauma therapy, it turned out, was complicated. She recognized, however, that she was also responsible, in part, for the fact that they had finally done it. They had a finished book. Or at least a book that was as finished as it was going to get. It had taken a more convoluted route to get here than she ever would have imagined beforehand, but finally they had it. Finally. She held it out for him to take. It was just notepaper that had been stapled along the side. It wasn't, after all, really a book. It had always, always just been a conceit to get him through the second phase of their work together. He reached out to accept it from her, but she didn't let go. "I am begging you," she said, her voice only half-jokingly threatening. "To please not rip it up." He huffed, annoyed. But that wasn't an answer, and she wasn't giving it over until he gave an answer. He still had difficulty accepting a product of his own efforts that was neither intentionally half-assed nor completely perfect. He still hated the book, she knew, and he had tried to rip it up before. "Fine," he said. That was good enough for her. So she let him take it. She watched as he flipped through it. He could do that now. He could flip through his retelling of those terrible events, and he could do it without his distress levels spiking. He could do it. "What's it like?" she asked, holding the finished product in your hand after all this time. "Hmm," he said. He flipped through it some more, and he sucked his teeth. "Not going to win a Pulitzer." "We weren't trying to." "Glad it's finally done with."
"Same here."
She saw something pass over his face. It was like a quick frown, but then it disappeared. She could not tell if he had purposefully hidden the expression, whatever it was, or if it had just cleared up on its own. He said, "Of course, it's not really finished, is it?" She changed her posture. She watched him to see if that expression would return.
"No, you're right. And I think it's finally time for us to talk about that."
Crowley had told her he was being honest. He told her everything in the book was the truth to the best of his recollection. He had told her this, and she believed him. She thoroughly believed him. She trusted him. He had also told her, however, that there was one chapter of the story that she could not know, that he could not tell her, that his safety and Aziraphale's safety and even her own safety depended on her not knowing. And on that matter, too, she believed him. She trusted him.
"What do you want to do about the redacted chapter?" she asked.
He waved the book backwards and forwards as he thought, as if fanning himself with it.
"Any suggestions?"
he asked.
"Well," she had to think.
It's tricky because I really don't know what's safe and what's not. Would it be safe to write it out? He moved his head, like he was considering. Like, what she had said was a possibility, but he just wasn't entirely satisfied.
I guess so. Just to have to check no one's watching, then destroy it once I'm done with it.
Ideally, of course, you'd write it out and then read through the whole book aloud with the redacted piece included. This was a puzzle. Maybe you could read it to Bud?
Crowley turned to look at his plant in its little gray and red pot.
No, I don't think so,
he said, and his voice was low. He was gentle and generous, and he was not self-conscious about it.
Bud's already overheard more of this book than I think is good for her.
I see, she said, and maybe her eyes gave away just how easily he could break her heart open in two. Crowley, she had understood from the very first day she saw him, did not form attachments easily. He felt safe when he was hidden and self-reliant. He did not tread easily into emotional intimacy with others. However, she had also come to understand that when Crowley did form an attachment to another, it happened quickly, wholeheartedly, and selfishly. Crowley did not act in half measures. Crowley, when he loved with the whole of himself. Crowley had allowed himself to love that little plant with the whole of himself. Sometimes it could be a good thing to have your heart broken open in two.
Maybe there's no way to get it finished, he said.
He said it like he was disappointed, like he took this to be an undesirable result. But the way he said it left her thinking about that frown that had passed across his face moments earlier. It left her thinking that perhaps she heard something else in his tone as well.
We can't be done here until it's finished, can we?
Ah, she thought. Yes, she had heard something else in his tone. Finishing the book doesn't mean we have to be done working together, she said.
No?
He asked. He asked it, and she thought he sounded like a small child who had just started learning how to trust. You're always welcome to decide we're done whenever you want. But no, I think there's still more for us to do. She smiled. She reassured. And then she pushed. As long as I'm living, Crowley, I'll be here for you. His eyes snapped up to hers, like he was surprised. And then they turned away. She saw something complicated pass across his face. Something like a smile, but not quite one. She understood that he had needed that reassurance. She assumed it had felt good to get that reassurance, but she understood another part of it as well. The clause, as long as I'm living, left her with complicated feelings too.
Well, he said, and there was a change in his tone now. It was no longer dangerous for the book to be finished. I could read it to Aziraphale.
Could you? She paused. She considered. You know, a long time ago, I thought it might be a good idea to share the whole book with him.
I am not doing that.
She glared at the interruption. I said, I thought. I wouldn't recommend it now, at least not until he has had his own chance to work through everything that happened. He looked down at the cover of the book, ran a finger over it.
It was traumatic for him, too.
Maybe. Never can be sure. Two people can go through the exact same event, and one will be traumatized and the other will be just fine. But I wouldn't want to risk it, not until he's had plenty of time to process everything himself.
The bandstand is what she did not say. There's no way I'm having him read the bandstand. Not until they've said he was ready.
The redacted chapter's different, though, Crowley said, almost as if he could read her thoughts. She was pretty sure, though, that he couldn't read her thoughts. She had tested it, and she was pretty confident in the results. He was still looking down at the book's cover. It's his story, as much as mine. It's our story. He looked up to her now, like something had dawned on him, like he had just come to a decision. His eyes were full of something. She thought perhaps hope and determination. I want to share it with him, he said. He said it and he meant it. He said it, and Aubrey Time knew that it was a decision that would not be undone. That's what I want to do. When Crowley loved, he loved with the whole of himself. Okay, she said. Let's figure out how to do it then. How's the chapter coming? Aubrey Time asked. She had asked this the previous session, and the one before that, too. Not ready yet, he replied. He had replied like this the previous session, and the one before that, too. Uh-huh, she said. Unlike previous times, he was starting to look a little embarrassed about the whole thing. Maybe we should talk about that, she said. I just can't find the right words. You aren't trying to win a Pulitzer, are you? He sighed. He shifted in his seat. He looked over to Bud on the end table, and he reached out to shift the plant's position one way and then another. Aubrey Time waited for him to sort through the thoughts he needed to share. It's just... he started. He frowned. He was frustrated, and she suspected that he was hiding some fear. How am I supposed to find a way to express something that there just aren't even words for? Aubrey Time could be many things. She could be cruel, and she could be a bit of a prick, and she could be pushy. She could be all of those things, but even still, she wasn't cruel enough, or enough of a prick, or pushy enough to point out that Crowley had literally just asked how to express the ineffable. She shifted in her seat. She held her chin in her hand and she watched him. You sure there isn't a word for it? She asked. He glanced up at her, then he glanced away. Maybe a word with four letters? His lips curled, as if in preparation for a sneer. Starts with L. There it was. There was the sneer. Rhymes with dove. He groaned and he fidgeted and he shifted this way and that. He reached out to Bud again, picked her up, then set her back down. We don't use that word, he muttered. Even if I wanted to, we don't use it. Aubrey Time could be cruel, and she could be a bit of a prick, and she most definitely could be pushy. So she responded, even if you wanted to use that word? Stop it, he said, adamant and agitated. He looked like sitting still was growing physically painful. He looked like that, and he shook his head back and forth, emphatic and adamant and agitated. You don't get it, Aubrey Time. You don't get it. There had been times in the past when that would have been the end of it. There had been times when he would have said that in order to shut her out, using the gulf between their disparate experiences to reject her. There had been times when she would have had to push and cajole and manipulate him to go on, to tell her more, to let her in. But not now. Not with how they were. Not with how hard they had both worked to get here. She knew, now, she simply had to wait. He would let her in, if she could just wait. She waited. All those sadistic shitheads up there, know what they say? He started, and she waited for him to continue. They say their love. That's what they say. Can't criticize them, can you, when all their actions are motivated by love? All they do, isn't it, is love. And best be careful you don't ever stop accepting that love. You know, a group of them attacked Aziraphale once? His superiors, even, when he hadn't done a single thing wrong, punched him, cornered him, and punched him. They hurt him. And that's what love is, Aubrey Time. That's the one thing Aziraphale has ever known as love. He didn't even want to tell me about it. They had hurt him, those execrable beings of love, and he didn't think he should even let me know about it. Wanted him to die, wanted to kill him, and would have too if we hadn't... He stopped himself. He clenched his jaw shut tight, turned his head to the ceiling, and snarled. His breathing was labored after giving such a bitter speech. His muscles were tense. He wasn't fidgeting anymore. He was still in that very dangerous way of his. He was still, and his eyes were focused on the ceiling, and she could see the glint in them. She could see the anger in them, the righteousness of the fury in them, the unrelenting power in them that he usually kept shielded. She could see the whole of him, encapsulated and encased in that deep well of feeling that inspired his fury. She watched him. She watched the anger and fury in him, and she watched as it was released and then let go. He was capable of fury, and he was a creature with power her mortal mind wasn't made to understand. But he was also gentle and generous. He was always gentle and generous, and so he didn't bring his eyes back down to her until the fury had passed.
"So we don't use that word?"
he repeated. His eyes were still full of feeling, and they were safe for her to look into. He stared at her, daring or imploring her to understand. She hadn't shifted in her seat. She hadn't changed her posture. She hadn't reacted at all to his speech or his expressed rage. She hadn't done anything of the sort because Aubrey Time was his therapist, and she needed a therapist who could hear him when he said what he needed to say. "He deserves better than that word," she summarized, quiet and calm. She could see instantly the tension leave Crowley. As soon as it registered that she empathized, that she understood, that she had heard. The tension left him, and he settled back into his seat. "It's a word that has been corrupted," she went on.
"Exactly," he said.
"It's been used as a weapon against him, and it hurts to be reminded of that." He expressed himself, and it came out as a whine. "You need a word like that one to say what you want to say in the redacted chapter, but the only words we have in English have been used like weapons."
"Not just English," he clarified. "Every language, all of them. They've hurt him with every language that's ever existed, and some that haven't yet."
She nodded. She understood. She understood, she thought, as far as a mortal like herself could understand. "Well, Crowley," she shifted in her posture for now, stretching out her arms to signal a shift in focus, a change in the direction of the conversation. "So, let's think it through. What do we do when we need to say something we don't have the words for?" He looked at her. He looked lost. He looked like a small child who had become lost. But she knew he would be able to find his way home. She and Crowley, they had worked hard to help him draw the map and construct the compass that would always allow him to find his way home. She gestured to Bud, sitting on the table. She gestured to the tree over by the window. She smiled at him. "Symbols," she said. "We use symbols." He was listening. "I am hereby giving you permission to write some bloody poetry," she said. He was still listening, but now he was glaring, too. "It's painful hearing you try to use slang like that," he said. She shrugged. She grinned. That's why she had done it, after all.
"Think you can write some poetry that says everything you need to say to Aziraphale?"
she asked.
He thought about it.
He tapped his fingers against the armrest of his chair.
"I'll try," he said,
and she knew what it meant. What Crowley felt for Aziraphale, he felt with the whole of himself.
"Let's settle on a date," she said.
She said this because he was stalling. She said this because she knew Crowley would keep on stalling. She said this because she knew how much Crowley always wanted to rip his book to shreds, and she could only imagine how many drafts of the redacted chapter had met just that fate. Crowley, she knew, could not accept from himself anything less than perfection. He hated himself. Given the prospect of offering to Aziraphale anything less than perfection, it was Aubrey Time's job to get him to stop with that already. Crowley was stalling, and it was Aubrey Time's job to get him to stop it.
"It'll be ready when it's ready," he said.
"Sure," she agreed. "It's always easiest to get someone to do what you want when all you do is agree with them. And how about we say that'll be ready 2 weeks from now?"
He sneered and he grumbled, and the two combined ended up seeming pretty close to a pout.
"What's Aziraphale's schedule like?" she pushed. "Would he be able to join us 2 weeks from now?"
This was her being a bit of an asshole. Nowadays, Aziraphale spent each of their sessions sitting in the waiting area outside. They both knew. She was just being an asshole because she wanted him to have to say the answer. He, of course, didn't want to say the answer. So he didn't answer.
"How about it, bud?" Aubrey Time said, swiveling her head enough to the side to make it clear she was now addressing the plant. "Can Crowley be ready 2 weeks from now?"
Crowley gave her a look. It was a look that said, "I really wish I hated you sometimes." She grinned in response. It was a grin that said, "I'm fine with that." She leaned forward a little towards Crowley and stage whispered,
"What's Bud's response?"
"If I'd known you'd end up being like this back when I first came here, I wouldn't have stayed for even a single session. You know that, right?"
"If I'd known I'd end up like this back then, I wouldn't have either."
She kept on grinning. It felt good being open and honest.
"What's Bud's response?"
Bud, apparently, didn't have a response. So Aubrey Time addressed the little plant again.
"Hey, Bud, can Crowley trust me?"
Eyes back on Crowley.
"What's Bud's response?"
"Yes, Herb, I trust you,"
Crowley said, like he was resigned to playing her game, even though he was actually refusing to play her game. It really did feel good, getting to be open and honest.
"And can he trust Aziraphale?"
she asked the little plant.
"Of course,"
Crowley said, without hesitation, without pause, without even the air of resigned acceptance that he had capitulated to play her game. Because what Crowley felt for Aziraphale, he felt with the whole of himself.
"One more question, Bud,"
she said, because Aubrey Time knew how to work with the rules of three. She knew what Bud was here to do.
"Can Crowley trust himself?"
That was the question that hit home. That was the question that hurt, that made it hard to be open and honest. She could see it on Crowley's face when she turned her attention away from the little plant. She could see it in his eyes, that this was the question that frightened him.
2 weeks,
she said. Soft and gentle, letting the great compassion she held for him bleed away the silliness and frivolity of the last few minutes. She said, "Trust me, and trust Aziraphale, and trust Bud." He didn't say yes, but he also didn't say no. He didn't say no, and so she would push just a little bit more. "You can share the chapter with Aziraphale in 2 weeks." "Fine," he mumbled. It scared the shit out of him. She could tell, but he said it anyway. It filled her heart with something like pride. Something more than pride. Something that she felt in particular for her clients who were willing to do the hard work, even when it scared the shit out of them. It was this feeling that she felt with the whole of herself. The next week was focused on planning and preparation. They set up ground rules. They practiced. They acted out how it would go. They evaluated worst case, best case, and most likely scenarios. They did everything they could to get Crowley to feel comfortable. They sat in silence as Crowley's system thrummed with the nervous energy that came from trying to trust himself. "It's not ready," he said. "It's not good enough." "When would it be good enough?" she asked, knowing the answer. "Never," he said, because that was always going to be his answer. "No, that's not right," she said. "Stop trying to make it perfect. It doesn't have to be perfect." He sighed. "I know it is hard, and you're going to have to trust that it is good enough," she said, and when she pushed him just a little bit more, "you're going to have to trust that you're good enough." He sighed again. Crowley entered her office first, and Aziraphale followed. She had rearranged the room so that all three could comfortably sit, the two armchairs side by side, and her computer chair across from them both. Crowley, of course, immediately went and sat in his customary seat, setting Bud down in her spot. Aziraphale, unlike Crowley, paused just inside the doorway. He gave Aubrey Time a small smile, and then he looked around the room. It occurred to her, as he looked around the room, that this was the first time he had been in her office without being distracted by some looming emergency. This was the first time, perhaps, that he could be comfortable while in her space. "Oh!" Aziraphale exclaimed, sounding very pleased, and he walked over to the tree in the window. "I remember you!" Both Aubrey Time and Crowley turned to watch him as he reached out to fuss with the tree. Both of them watched as Aziraphale touched one of the tree's leaves. Both of them watched as the tree vibrated and grew just a bit fuller, the leaves just a bit more robust and verdant. They watched as Aziraphale, without even thinking about it, healed Aubrey Time's tree. "Aziraphale!" Crowley hissed from his seat. "Get away from that!" "What?" Aziraphale could clearly tell he had upset Crowley, but it was also clear he didn't understand how or why. He turned to look at Crowley, but he stayed in place. "You can't just heal her tree!" Crowley was exasperated. "I don't see why not," Aziraphale defended himself. "Guys," Aubrey Time tried, still standing by the door. "We have a contract and everything," Crowley whined, gesticulating. "I only just got her to accept that plant food is a real thing, and you just come and just heal it like that." That wasn't quite true. She accepted that there were products called plant food after he had first brought it up, after she had finished laughing at what she took to be a joke, after he had very strenuously insisted that it wasn't a joke. She had gone online and found out that plant food really was a thing she could purchase. But she wasn't convinced it always had been a real thing. She didn't know the extent of Crowley's powers, but she did know the extent of his pettiness
and his willingness to follow through on a prank. Being a mortal with a demon for a client, she accepted, meant not always getting to know for sure whether plant food was something that had existed before he decided to convince her that it did. "You had a contract about a tree?" Aziraphale said, as if confused.
"Look, you just don't understand," Crowley said. "It's a whole thing. It's all symbolic. She's obsessed with symbols. Can't scratch your nose in here without her treating it like it means something."
"Well, fuck you too, Crowley," she thought. "Guys," she tried again, louder now, settling a powerful glare on Crowley. It seemed to do the trick, so she softened her expression and turned to Aziraphale. She turned her attention to Aziraphale, and she drummed up all the courage it took to do something that scared the shit out of her. "Thank you," she said, and she pushed herself to mean it. She glanced quickly back to Crowley, and then she continued. "You saw the tree was struggling, and you helped it. Thank you." This wasn't fair to Aziraphale. He didn't know what he had walked into. He didn't know the full significance of what was happening. He had simply performed a kindness out of the goodness of his heart, without even having thought about it. This wasn't fair to him, and he seemed to know it. And he also seemed to not know what to do about it. His expression was caught between guilt and graciousness. "Oh, well," he started, and then he stopped. His fingers pulled at his waistcoat. His eyes kept traveling back between her and Crowley. "It was nothing. I simply thought..."
"Come sit down, Angel,"
Crowley said, the exasperation completely gone from him, the whole of his voice filled with what he felt for Aziraphale. He was patient and sweet, gentle and generous. He was always patient and sweet with Aziraphale, even when he was exasperated and grumpy. Perhaps especially when he was exasperated and grumpy. Aziraphale came and sat down beside him. Aubrey Time paused a moment longer by the door. She paused and she caught Crowley's eye. She paused, she caught his eye, and she waited until he nodded. She nodded back. They were in agreement. The contract still stands. Then she came and she sat across from the both of them. "Right," she said, gathering her thoughts, thinking through how far off the tracks they had gotten. "Thank you for joining us today, Aziraphale."
"That's another thing she does in here," Crowley mumbles. "Says thank you for absolutely everything." Good old Crowley, she thought. But she wasn't going to rise to his bait. It was okay if he felt he needed to bait her. She knew how nervous he was. How hard she had pushed him to come to this point, and she wasn't going to rise to his bait.
"As you know," she went on, addressing Aziraphale, because she was going to continue with the plan they had painstakingly worked out, even if Crowley intended to keep going off script. "Crowley and I have been spending a lot of time working through the events surrounding the fire at your bookshop." "Right, yes," Aziraphale said. He was committed. He was so committed. He had come here today for Crowley, for Crowley's sake, and he was completely committed. He nodded, and he waited for her to continue.
"Here, I wrote this," Crowley said, cutting off her explanation. "Going too fast."
He said it while pulling some paper out of his jacket pocket and pushing it at Aziraphale.
"So you can read it, I guess."
They had planned. They had fucking prepared. They had come up with this goddamn fucking script, and they had practiced it. And of course, it was all thrown right out the window as soon as Crowley was in the actual situation. It took the full extent of Aubrey Time's professionalism to avoid rolling her eyes until they fell right the fuck out of her head. "You wrote this?" Aziraphale said, his voice quiet. He took the paper in his hands. He seemed surprised, in his hesitant way, and perhaps pleased, in his gentle and careful way. "We've been writing out Crowley's recollections of everything surrounding the fire," she interjected. "Crowley might have thrown their plan right out the window, but she wouldn't. He had given strict ground rules. She was not to refer to what they had done as writing a book. Crowley was too proud to let Aziraphale hear it described as a book. And even though he was doing nothing but bait her, and even though he was doing everything in his power to be his good old adversarial self, she would respect his ground rules. There is one section, though, that he couldn't share with me." "Oh, yes, of course," Aziraphale said, still looking down, immediately seeming to understand. Aubrey Time did not take offense to the interruption.
"So just read it," Crowley said.
And Aubrey Time did not take offense at this interruption. "Crowley, would you like to tell Aziraphale why you wanted to share this with him before he reads it?"
she asked, because fuck you, Crowley. "No," he said, the ass.
"I can't believe you wrote something for me, my dear," Aziraphale said. Aubrey Time watched as his eyes flickered up to Crowley, then back down to the paper, then up again. Aubrey Time watched his eyes, and she saw that they were already turning glossy.
"It doesn't mean anything,"
Crowley mumbled, fooling no one in the room, not even the plants. "Oh," Aziraphale said, and it was impressive just how full of meaning a single syllable from him could be.
"So just read it, okay?" Crowley said.
Aubrey Time could see how antsy he was, how scared he was, how vulnerable he was allowing himself to be. Almost as if acting for mercy, Aziraphale began to read. "Professional psychotherapists, like Aubrey Time, can practice a variety of different types of therapy. Individual therapy, in which the therapist works with a single client, is perhaps the most famous style. Group therapy, in which the therapist works with an entire group, is an incredibly powerful modality, even if those who could most benefit from group view it with suspicion. Aubrey Time practiced both of these types of therapies. She ran groups and she worked with individuals. There were modes of therapy, however, that she did not practice, and she had no interest in practicing, that she regarded as most likely the equivalent to having her skin flayed. Family therapy was one of them. Aubrey Time did not get families. Couples therapy was another. Aubrey Time did not get couples. She didn't like having to navigate the complexities of a couple's interactions, a family system's internal mechanisms. She didn't like the loss of control she experienced when confronted with a family or a couple. They could be interesting in a clinical sort of way, but she didn't want to have to work with them. Just look at how this session had gone for proof. She had worked with her client to set up a plan, and she had been compliant and conscientious while practicing it. And then it had all gone out the window, soon as the third person was in the room. Aubrey Time hated it. There were aspects to couples and families, Aubrey Time had enough insight to recognize, that just didn't make sense to her. They would never make sense to her, she was fairly sure. She just wasn't set up internally, she felt, to make sense of couples and families. She could appreciate the great depth of feeling someone like Crowley could hold for someone like Aziraphale. And she could be amazed by it, heartbroken by it, touched deeply by the significance of it. But she felt she didn't truly understand it. She felt she would never truly understand it. Aubrey Time was at peace with this aspect of herself. She may not truly understand it, but it could still break her heart right open in two, the way that Crowley watched Aziraphale as Aziraphale read.
She could feel her heart break open in two as she saw the hope and affection and naked vulnerability on Crowley's face. She could feel it as she watched how thoroughly and irrevocably Crowley's attention was focused on Aziraphale, and only Aziraphale. What Crowley felt for Aziraphale, he felt with the whole of himself. She watched as Crowley seemed to drink up each small movement and sound that came from Aziraphale. There were small noises, and ah, at one point, or oh, even a chuckle. Crowley, she thought, thrived on these noises. Crowley, she thought, lived for them. Aubrey Time did not get couples and families, but she could appreciate what she saw. She could appreciate the way that Aziraphale wiped at his eyes as he read. She could appreciate how Crowley reached for a tissue without even looking and handed it over to his companion. She could appreciate how Aziraphale took it, looking up, smiling with a deeper affection than Aubrey Time thought she had ever seen expressed by anyone ever before. She could appreciate just how much Aziraphale meant once he had finished reading the redacted chapter, once he met Crowley's eyes, as he said, "Oh, Crowley, my dear Crowley." Crowley was a poet. Aubrey Time had known. She had never actually read any of his finished poetry, but she knew he was a poet. "I should like to keep this on my shelf. Yes, right next to Hamlet," Aziraphale said. The fuck? Aubrey Time thought, but she wasn't going to distract them in this moment. This moment wasn't about her. This moment wasn't about her reconsidering how much Crowley had disliked her joking about Shakespeare. In this moment, Aubrey Time's role was simply to observe. It was her role to act as witness, to ignore all the questions she suddenly found rolling in her mind. It was her job, her responsibility and honor, to be merely observer and witness. "You know we can't do that," Crowley said. His voice was deep and low, consolatory. His eyes never left Aziraphale. "We can't keep it." "Oh, yes, I know," Aziraphale said, and he looked down from Crowley, looking at the redacted chapter that he held on his knee. He ran his finger over the paper, as if smoothing it out, as if it were too precious to imagine destroying it. "It would be nice to be able to, though, wouldn't it? Oh, Crowley, it's simply perfect." Aubrey Time's role was simply to observe and witness. That is, until it was her role to intervene. "I'm wondering, Aziraphale," she said quietly, with a gentle clearing of her throat. "Would you be willing to clarify that a bit? When you say it's perfect, I mean that it's from you," Aziraphale said, not skipping a beat, seeking out Crowley's eyes. He reached out for a hand into the space between the two chairs. He reached out for a hand, and Crowley joined him in that in-between space. They reached out together, towards each other, and they clasped hold of each other's hands. They held on to each other. They held on tight. "You wrote this," Aziraphale continued. He had his tissue in his free hand, and he wiped at his eyes again, without breaking his gaze, without turning away from Crowley. "You wrote this for me, Crowley. Oh, why aren't you always writing, my dear?" Crowley smiled. He smiled at Aziraphale. Aubrey Time watched as Crowley smiled at Aziraphale. She would never get it, everything that a smile like that could convey, but she could appreciate it. She could be honored by it, by being granted the role of standing as observer and witness to it. "We have to burn it, you know," Crowley said. "Yes," Aziraphale said. He sounded resigned, but then something meaningful flickered across his face. He smiled in a private sort of way. Yes, we should burn it, and then we shall take the ashes and drown them, shan't we?
Yes, Crowley said, and it was his turn to smile. He smiled in a way that quickly turned into a contented grin. Yes, that's exactly what we'll do.
She had no idea what was contained within that redacted chapter. That was the whole point of this exercise, to keep her too mortal mind from knowing whatever was described in the redacted chapter. She wondered, though. She wondered what it could have been that had allowed Crowley to express so much to Aziraphale, as he clearly had done. She wondered how the prospect of taking something beautiful, burning it to ashes, and then drowning it, could have as much romantic import as Crowley and Aziraphale clearly saw it to have. She wondered just what it was that had happened in that time between the showdown in Tadfield and their lunch at the Ritz. She could do nothing but wonder. She had to wonder what had happened, what Crowley had expressed through poetry, what it was that had apparently been so meaningful for both of them. She had to wonder how it fit into the rest of the trauma narrative she now knew so well. She had to wonder what Aziraphale's version of the whole of the trauma narrative would have been like, what the whole of the book would have been like if Aziraphale had been the one to write it out. She had to wonder, too, what really had happened, what the story would look like if told by someone who hadn't been a part of the events, someone who hadn't been traumatized by them. She had to wonder what the story of the week when the world hadn't ended would have been like, if it had been told by some sort of omniscient narrator, some impartial spectator who could describe it with infinite clarity and accuracy. She had to wonder. Aubrey Time did not believe in the existence of any such impartial spectator. She did not live in a world, she believed, in which anyone was positioned to tell the whole of a story, to lay it out without bias. She knew who would proclaim herself to be an impartial, unbiased spectator, but Aubrey Time rejected that. She rejected her as an authority, as an impartial narrator, as a source of truth. Aubrey Time did not believe that she lived in a world where any omnisciently narrated book could exist, and as she watched Crowley and Aziraphale hold hands over the redacted chapter she would never be allowed to read, she knew she would never get to understand the whole of their story. She knew all of that. She knew more as well. She knew, as she saw how Crowley looked at Aziraphale, and how Aziraphale looked at Crowley, as she reflected on the whole of Crowley's reasons for rejecting love, for protecting Aziraphale from that four-letter word, as she reflected on everything she knew about her client and his preternatural partner, she knew. Whatever the story might look like, whoever might tell it, from whatever perspective it might be presented, it most certainly was a love story. Aubrey Time did not believe that she was the sort of person who deserved to be witness to a love story like this. She felt just how fully she was not deserving. But she was grateful for it. She was grateful, and she believed that getting to experience moments like this while working with a client like Crowley was likely the closest a human like her would ever come to the feeling of grace. Aubrey Time was grateful for the role she was positioned to play, as observer and witness. She said goodbye to Aziraphale. She closed the door behind him, and then she returned to her computer chair, still positioned across from Crowley. Aziraphale would wait another 15 minutes as she and Crowley checked in. A joint session, like the one they had just had, was always best followed by a chance to process what had happened.
"Wasn't so bad, really," Crowley said.
Uh-huh.
Went well, I guess.
Sure. I'm glad I did it. Bingo, she said. She smiled.